You are listening to Right On Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at kfai.org. I'm Liz Olds. Tonight on Right On Radio, we're embarking on an exciting new collaboration with the Atoptic Graphic Arts Festival. Atoptic is a Twin Cities-based arts festival focusing on comics, zines, and print media. Atoptic's 2020 Fest may have been postponed due to COVID, but they're not going quietly.
This fall on KFAI, Right On Radio is collaborating with the Atoptic team and the Gutter Boys podcast to present interviews with some of Atoptic's most exciting guests as a limited series for the whole community to hear. For myself, as a comics and zines enthusiast who typically attends Atoptic every year, this is an extra exciting opportunity for me, and I want to thank Pete Fakey and the Atoptic board for making this possible. Tonight, Sean Knickerbocker of Rust Belt Comics interviews Rumi Hara, the Ignatz-nominated and Mocha Arts Festival awards-winning cartoonist behind the Nori series. So let's get that started without further ado.
All right. Hi. Hello. Welcome to the Atoptic Online 2020 conversation with Rumi Hara. I'm Sean Knickerbocker, and I am joined today with Rumi. And before we get going, let me give you a little bit of background. Rumi was born in Kyoto, Japan in 1982 and grew up with her two loving grandmothers, helping to take care of her and her little brother. While working as a translator in Tokyo, she started printing her own comics on a tiny home printer in 2010. After attending Savannah College of Art and Design, Hara moved to New York City in 2014, where she now lives and works as an illustrator and comics artist. Nori was first self-published as a series of mini-comics, and was nominated for an Ignatz Award in 2018. Rumi, how are you doing?
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me. I'm good. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. So I figure we should just go ahead and dive right in with your newest book, Nori. Can you kind of give us a little bit of background on the book and tell us about it?
Sure. So Nori is about a little girl growing up in Japan. She's 3 at the beginning of the book, and then she turns 4. So it's Nori's year living with grandma, making new friends, going on new adventures in her hometown in Japan, and also she gets to go to Hawaii in one chapter.
Great. Awesome. So with this book, it did start off as a mini comic and eventually it was this collection. So what was did you originally envision this to be a collection at first, or were you just kind of working with the character a little bit before making that huge plunge into a larger collection of stories?
No. Yeah. So it started with, a very short story, a mini comic of, I think it was 16 pages, which is now the first chapter of the book. And when I was making that story, I was just making a short story. I just had this idea. I grew up with my grandma living with us. Well, two grandmas taking their turns, taking care of the kids. So I just wanted to make a story about a little kid and her grandma, and it was just a small project that kind of developed into a bigger one. After making the first story, I just couldn't stop thinking about Nori, so it went from there.
So was it the first 3 stories that were mini comics, or how many were you doing as minis before you, like, jumped in? Because it seems like the Hawaii story is really large. It's a really big project.
Yeah.
In itself. It's almost a book by itself. So
Yes, the first three chapters were the mini comics. The third story, it got longer and longer. I guess because I was getting to know Nori better, so the stories got longer. And yeah, before making the first, the fourth story, which was the Hawaii story, I knew it was going to be like 90 pages. So I thought that I couldn't print it myself. And I also felt like I had enough to start showing it to people as like a book project. Yeah.
Nice. So when working with this character, Nori, and some of the earlier stories, that, like you said, they are very short, where towards as you're getting further and further into this project, the stories are getting longer. Did you kind of change the approach in terms of how you're telling those stories since you had more pages to work with versus having just a compressed like 16, 20 page mini comic kind of format? Was that something that you were thinking about at all when you were writing and drawing the stories? Or?
Definitely for the Hawaii chapter. I guess that's the only very long chapter.
Yeah, that's true.
when I was printing my own minis, I had to think about like printing it myself and then folding the paper, and like aligning all the pages. And should I do a two-page spread or not? If I do a two-page spread, it will be so annoying to align it perfectly. Things like that I didn't have to think about for the Hawaii book, so I just I was able to focus on the story and what I want to draw.
So getting into like the mini comics process, were you printing them yourselves? Were you doing all the assembly and everything and all the printing like from your home or your studio, or were you like going to a print shop or working with other people to make those books happen?
Yeah, for Nori, I used the Riso Lab at SVA in Manhattan, and I printed everything there, and then I brought all the printed paper back to my studio space that I share with my friends in Brooklyn, and I bound everything by myself. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah. Do you find that that's a part of it? Because I'm curious, because you did say you're starting to make comics, you know, in your bio, you're talking about like, you know, in 2010, you were making them and printing them yourself from your home printer. Do you find that that's kind of a part of your process? Or do you feel like once that you, now that you do have a publisher, that you feel like, now that I have a publisher, I don't have to worry about production. I can just focus on making the stories and drawing them. Or do you have like an affinity to the actual process of bookmaking or anything?
You know, I thought when I have a publisher, I won't have to print it or like bind it myself, but I kind of like the process, I think. So I'm making some new stories now, and I have a plan to print them myself again. Although with the pandemic, it might be a little complicated to figure out the logistics of it. But somehow I like to print it myself. Maybe do good old Xerox printing at Staples or somewhere and do a small edition. But yeah, I really love the process, I think.
So you had went to SCAD for an illustration program kind of after you start kind of drawing comics, from what I understand. Is that correct? You're kind of self-publishing and then you kind of took that step. Is that correct? And what drew you specifically to like an illustration program, like a master program versus like, because there are like comics programs out there and there are certainly a lot of people that are just autodidactic and kind of just go in their own direction and pursue, you know, illustration or comics outside of like an academic institution.
So I always loved drawing, but I never really thought of it as a career. I loved reading and translating. I grew up partly in Atlanta, Georgia, so I thought, okay, I can speak English and Japanese. What can I do? And like translation was like kind of what came to mind. And also like you know, everyone around me thought that I should do translation, and that's what I started to do. But I wanted to draw. I started making comics and printing them while I was working as a translator in Japan. And then, when I thought about making it as my career, my work, I looked into several different programs, and SCAD was SCAD seemed like a good place to go. I think I just wasn't really sure if I want to just focus on comics or do both illustration and comics. So I just went to the illustration program.
Yeah. So with one of your books, Borderland, which is you know, kind of centered in that area of Georgia, Tybee Island, correct? Is that the location? Yeah.
The location is actually just around the whole area, the coastal Georgia area with all the different sea islands. It was a really inspiring landscape and all the history and everything too.
And that seems to be something that like is a reoccurring theme throughout all of the comics that I've read of yours, is like the environment and just the landscape and wildlife in general like play really big roles in the stories you're telling, just either through observation or having like a more of a plot to them. So do you find that that's something that like just you're always thinking about in general, is like just when you're telling stories, is like environment and like sensory kind of things? Because I see that with food too, like, and especially in the Nori stories, there's a lot of exploration of just like basic sensory experiences that a child would have either with like animals or the environment or food.
Yeah, I think sense of place is very important to me in general. I think it's because I moved around a lot while I was growing up, and also even now, I changed schools every year when I was in grade school. My mom had a job that took her to different places, Tokyo, Atlanta. We were moving a lot, and I think it just made me think a lot about where I belong, how I belong to a particular place, how I fit in, things like that. And, you know, I think if when you grow up in one place, you get really attached to the environment, you know, the nature and all the animals you can find there. I felt like I kind of missed out on that because I was moving so much. But then I thought, well, I didn't really miss anything. I just got to experience a whole lot more maybe like someone who stayed in one place. So not that like which is better, it's just that's how I grew up. So the landscape and the whole sensory experience, like you said, about that particular place is really important to me, and I think I'd like to explore that in my comics as well.
Yeah. So like moving on to that a little bit, I noticed with the comic you did, the Peanut Butter Sisters, as well as some of your earlier work like Home River and the Return to of Japanese Wolves, like there's this kind of theme where you're kind of exploring kind of like a dying ecosystem or trying to live in a dying environment a little bit. You know, like the Peanut Butter Sisters seem to like live in this world, or they're carried away by hurricanes and they're collecting junk and selling these items, and the Return of the Japanese Wolves is all about these extinct creature, you know, wolves. And Home River, you know, has that same theme too. So it's not really prevalent in Nori, but are these kind of the themes that you look at, you're kind of thinking about exploring in the future, or do you have interest in that kind of topic, especially since we are living in a world that is experiencing those kind of things right now? Is that something that's kind of in the back of your head ever, or?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I guess anyone living in the current times can't really escape from that. It's just really scary. So many animals are going extinct every year, every month even, I think. It's just a really scary thing. I love being in nature, like hiking. I always grew up in the city, so maybe I'm not that like a nature person, but I love hiking, going to the ocean, things like that. And I feel like in the near future that might not be possible, and for like younger people, they might not be able to experience what I was able to experience. So yeah, it's always I think in the back of my head. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's great that you read all my comics.
They're really good. It was hard not to.
Oh, thank you. I don't get to meet a lot of people who read everything, so thank you.
Yeah. So you do have a career as an illustrator, and you are also a cartoonist. So when you're working in the world of illustration, what kind of similarities and differences do you find with that of being a cartoonist? And like, do you feel like being an illustrator has kind of helped you be a more informed cartoonist?
I don't know. I feel like for me it's kind of the same. I like drawing. Drawing's really fun. but maybe it's a little bit different mentality, because in terms of the time you get to spend on one single illustration, that's more than the time you get to spend with like one single page in comics, most of the time. So like I can put more details and more colors in one illustration, but I wouldn't want to do that for comics, because it'll be it'll take a lot more time to finish a story. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a same process for me.
Your comics they're usually just like two color comics, right? Whereas like a lot of your illustration work seems to be like full color. So I imagine you're probably spending a lot more time on a single illustration than say like a panel of a comic, obviously, I would imagine, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I would love to do a full color comics one day.
Yeah.
But it might take like 5 years.
Right? Yeah. I mean,
for me, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it would look incredible, but yes. I really like that there was in the Borderlands book specifically, you did have this blend of like, you started the book with illustrations and then you moved into a sequential piece and then you ended it with illustrations. And on one hand, like there is a similar aesthetic because it is your drawing style. But on the other hand, they are like, to me, like they are like two separate entities. Like they're two very different things. Working with these full color illustrations where you're playing a lot more with value, and then when you're switching over to these comics pages, you're working with brush and you're working a lot more with balancing areas of black and white. So I'm just curious about like your process in terms of when you're thinking about drawing a comics page versus doing a full color illustration, how that comes into play, like determining like the composition, I guess.
Sorry,
that's a really muddy question.
I'm glad you brought up Borderlands though, because I did that I think in 2014. That was actually my thesis project at SCAD. But it still has a special place in my heart, I think, because I'm just very fascinated by the landscape surrounding Savannah, Georgia. Like I mentioned, I partly grew up in Atlanta. So I was 8 when I got there, and then when I was 10, I left and went back to Japan with my mom. But during that time, she brought me and my brother there just for a visit to Savannah, and I thought that was like the most beautiful place on earth. I remember like really lush green garden, and then there's the ocean right there. I think I remembered it wrong because the beach is actually like 20 minutes away. But yeah, so going back there and seeing how pretty it is with all the trees. And the beach is like a little further away than I remembered, but it's still right there. But then I learned about the history of like slavery, and all the racial tensions and everything that goes on in the American society now. I thought a lot about how I fit into that because I am an outsider. I'm just there for 2 years for school, but I am there. So I just wanted to figure out and think about what I can do with my visual storytelling, I guess, while I was there. And yeah, mixing watercolor illustration and black and white comics, it felt like a right way to tell that particular story.
I had lived in Savannah for a couple, maybe that's why I keep going back to that borderland story. So I had lived in Savannah for a few years. So I think it did speak to me. And that's the really great thing about that area is you have areas where there's beaches and you have swamps and you have the river. And you have this, you know, this really beautiful historic downtown area, and you have Spanish moss. So there's just like a lot of different views in this very small area. And I do think
in
that's
the
really
food.
Yes, in the food.
Oh my god!
Again, the food. Yes, is you know, southern cooking in general. There's
yeah,
just like a
yeah.
lot of different things going on there. A lot
oh,
of
I miss that.
Yeah. So, that really spoke to me. But I think that's really great that, you know, even when you were in this college experience, like you kind of reached outside your bubble to kind of to explore the history a bit, which I think is, you know, I think that's a difficult thing to do when you're in school. And I feel like, especially when I knew people that were students at Savannah College of Art and Design, like it's almost like a different world, even though it's kind of built into the city. Yeah. So I think, you know, I thought that was really great that you were able to connect to that environment a little bit.
Yeah. I had a chance to participate in a field trip to Ossabaw Island. It's one of the sea islands there. But SCAD was organizing like a spring break working field trip to the island. And it's a preserved area, so you can't just like take a ferry and go there. You have to have like a specific purpose to go and like permission, I think. But yeah, that's when I got to really explore the history and the geography, I think, of the area. And yeah, that was kind of eye-opening.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, HD Minneapolis, and streaming live on the web at kfai.org. KFAI, Radio Without Boundaries. And now back to our special collaboration with Autoptic. Picking up right where we left off in the Right on Radio and Autoptic Arts Festival collaboration, on tonight's installment, Sean Knickerbocker is interviewing Rumi Hara, the award-winning cartoonist behind the Nori series. Let's get back into it.
So then in 2014, you moved to New York City. Did you move specifically to New York to kind of like engage more with the illustration and comics community, or were you just kind of looking for like a really big change in and like the world around you.
No, yeah, I thought that was a New York was a great place to go for illustration and comics. While I was at SCAD, I went to MoCA Arts Festival in 2014, and that was a great experience. Yeah, and I could just get a van and drive up to New York. But if I, for example, went to LA, it would have been a little too far away. So, yeah. Also, good Asian food in New York.
Yes. I hear they have good Asian food in New York.
Yeah, that was lacking in Savannah.
Yeah.
So I needed to move.
Yeah, so the South, I mean, specifically Savannah in general, like pizza, not very good. Asian food, not very good. But that's not their fortes. But yeah, New York, yeah, also great food, different food from Savannah. All right. So, I mean, it's kind of most of the questions, we really just shot through them. Were there any? Oh, yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about No a little bit. So let's talk about No. So that seems to be a theme that I see a little bit showing up in Nori specifically. Like, it seems like some of these characters that show up towards the end of the stories might be spirits, might not be. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so no drama is a Japanese traditional form of drama that originated in the medieval times. And I think when people think of Japanese culture, maybe it's one of the first things they think of, with the mask and the costume and everything. It's really fascinating. There's this category of no called Mugen no. And the basic structure of it is a traveler arrives at a place, and that place has like a historic or maybe poetic significance. And the traveler, in the second half of the play, the traveler dreams, and in the dream he encounters a ghost or a spirit of the person that still haunts the area, and learns more about the history or the poetic significance of the place. So that's like a basic structure. So a traveler falls asleep and then dreams this revelation dream, and the audience gets to witness that together with the traveler character. And I think that's like the structure that I think about a lot when I'm making a story. I think it's really interesting to incorporate that dream element in a story. Because dream is a very interesting thing. It's kind of like a story we tell ourselves every night, even though we don't remember all of it. It definitely happened and it had an impact on you, but when you wake up, it's like gone without a trace. And I think No is maybe like a bridge to connect comics in that kind of powerful storytelling energy that the dream has. I don't know if it makes sense, but yeah.
No, yeah.
So, I think about No a lot, and I like reading the No plays. I like No in general. So I use like other elements of No, like the rhythm and the music, the philosophy of it in general.
So for the next project you're working on, that seems to be a series of short stories again. Is that correct? Or, I mean, I imagine you probably have a few projects, but I think I heard something about another series of short stories that would, like Drawn Quarterly, will eventually collect, right?
Yes. Yeah, I hope so.
Yes.
I'm working on it right now. Yeah, I'm making 7 short stories. Peanut Butter Sisters is one of it. But yeah, right now I'm making a sci-fi story that's set in 2099.
Excellent.
And it's the world where the scientists figured out a way to use dark energy in space. It's like an unidentified energy, but it's everywhere and it's making the whole world expand, apparently. Like, not just our universe, but all the universes. I don't know how many there are, but out there, they're expanding. So that much they figured it out. But this energy that's like driving the expansion, it's called dark energy, and they don't really know what it is. I thought that was really interesting. So I imagined a world not too far in the future where people get to use that to travel really fast and go to other galaxies. Yeah.
So with those stories, are those like separate from these other comics that you had mentioned earlier that you're kind of working on? Like you said, you were working on like shorter stories,
that's one of the short stories.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So everything's all different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It takes place in the Mojave Desert. The desert in Southern California. I went there last year and it was really nice. So,
yeah. Do you find that that's that's kind of like an inspiration for writing story? I mean, I kind of went over this a little bit, but that seems to be a thing, right? Like you visiting a place and then you kind of absorb that environment, and does that inspire you then to write a story? Or do you think about a story before going to a place?
I think of a story before going to a place. It's kind of become my excuse for traveling. Yeah, I love traveling, but I want to make it productive too. So last year I really wanted to go to the desert. I've never been to a desert. And I thought, why not? I'll just make a story out of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great write-off. Like,
yes, all, yeah, definitely. Yeah. That too.
So did you go to Hawaii for like that Nori story then? Like, cause that's like,
yes.
All, yeah. Okay, cool.
I did. Yeah. Oh, I awesome. Really wanted to go to Hawaii. So I thought Nori can go there with me.
That's awesome.
But, it's also, I try to make it not too random though. When I was growing up in the 80s, the economy was booming in Japan. That's when, the whole world thought, Japan was like the richest country in the world. It was kind of a crazy, surreal time. And I remember seeing, like, for raffles, you can win a trip to Hawaii. And that was like, you know, a normal prize offered. That's crazy to think of it now. Japan is in like eternal recession.
Yeah.
Ever since the 90s. And all you can get at a raffle is like maybe a ticket for, I don't know, like lunch for two. That's like the best prize you can win. So thinking back at that, it's kind of crazy. And I thought it'll be fun to show Nori and Grandma winning a trip to Hawaii.
Dealing with Japan in the 80s, I wasn't too familiar with the reference, but I felt like it was something very specific, and maybe it just went above me. Like in one of the early Nori stories, there's like a poster that says ultra democracy on it.
Oh.
I was just curious if that was like a specific reference to something or like what that was.
I was just being silly.
Okay. I was like, man, was there like some like weird politician that was just like, we're going to get the most democracy. And it's like, if that's the case, I want to know who this guy is. That sounds incredible.
That'll be really fun. But it's true that I think there are a lot of politicians in Japan that come up with like weird catchphrases or like name of the party. There are so many different political parties in Japan, and some of the names are kind of silly when you think about it. I just wanted to make something up for a fun poster.
Right on. So with those stories too, I mean, I imagine you were probably grabbing a little bit from your experiences living in Japan as a kid though, right? Like, and specifically, you know, being raised or like having your grandmother help raise you and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun growing up with my grandmothers. They told me a lot of different stories. My grandma used to dream about becoming a princess. And like she would fight the bad guys too, so she was like a superhero princess, and that was like a recurring dream that she had. and of course, so she's a Japanese princess, so she's like in a gorgeous kimono, she comes out from like her carriage. And then she fights ninja with all these swords and everything. I don't know. I can just picture that dream vividly in my head still. It was a fun childhood.
Awesome. We're just bouncing around all over the place now. Moving back to your illustration career, what kind of got the ball rolling with that? And like, is that like your major source of like income? I mean, we don't have to get to those numbers, but you know what I mean? Is that like your main job, illustration, or do you kind of just like pick up gigs wherever you can get them?
I pick up gigs wherever I can get them. So I also teach now at Bergen Community College, and that's been a lot of fun too. I love watching people draw. So I get to make students draw what I want.
Yeah.
So that's great. I was also helping another artist with the painting. I was like a painting assistant. I've done illustrations for animations, like watercolor paintings to be animated. I've done editorial things. Anything that I find.
Right. Have you been teaching during the pandemic at all? Have you been like doing online teaching?
Yeah, it's all been online. Yeah.
What's that been like? Has that been?
It's interesting. It's weird, but in some ways it's better. I'm just trying to think positively maybe, but it kind of let me talk to the students more intimately. Take a time to just chat with individual students, one person at a time. And it felt close. They can like show me what they're working on. And of course you can do that in a classroom, but it's always with everyone else in the classroom. So it didn't really feel like a one-on-one time. So that was a kind of a new discovery that I made that, yeah.
So is it like a drawing class, or are they like studio art classes?
It's an illustration class. It's a studio class. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you work a lot with brush, right? Like that seems to be like your primary tool. At what point did you like discover that was your preferred method, and like what drew you to specifically working in that style or using a brush?
I think it was an inking class that I took at SCAD, because before that I had no idea, and I was just drawing with whatever I can find, like just pencils or Micron pens, which are good tools, but I wasn't very intentional about what I used. But then I took this class, and then we had to do an exercise in that class, and we had to use the brush and ink, and I loved it. It was difficult at first, but I really like the effect.
Yeah, I really like the texture that you're getting with it, like with like those large areas of black. You can still like you can almost feel the paper with it. You know, you can just see like these subtle variances, and that's one thing I was really appreciating with the specifically the Hawaii story. You know, it almost seems like you start to transition more to like almost using ink washes, whereas before it's almost like flat color. But then when you get to the story, like there's this like almost seems watercolory kind of, you know, work going on even with your black line art. With those illustrations, like, because you went to Hawaii, were you drawing on scene for the, like, was it seemed like you had a very specific reference for those images?
I was sketching a lot while I was there, and I did use some drawings from the sketchbook in the actual story. I also took a lot of reference photos. I also found a spot for Grandma and Nori to sit. It was like when Nori goes to the tidal pool, I think there's like a specific rock with a tree behind it that they sit together and take a picture. That actually existed. But yeah, it's Hawaii, so the ocean is, I guess, the main thing. So I think I used a lot more ink washes than usual. Yeah.
Do you use a lot of photo reference with your work?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I try to take my own references. Another excuse to go traveling. Yeah.
When you're working with the wash stuff, obviously, have you tried doing that with like the risograph kind of printing stuff, like using washes, or do you try and just keep it more like basic line art? Because I know there's some limitations with risograph printers. Has that been something you've kind of experimented with at all, or does that not really even, I don't know how much of a factor that is when you're thinking about
printing, yeah, I tried printing like watercolor illustrations with Riso, and it comes out nicely. The texture, it's surprising. It's surprisingly accurate. So yeah. It is hard to separate the colors, though.
Oh, I can imagine. So, yeah. You're drawing everything in full color, and then you're separating the colors? Oh, I can't imagine.
Well, when I'm doing everything myself, I try to just draw the layers separately so that I don't have to separate the layers. But I had like a pro do it for me once for the Borderland book. That was printed by Perfectly Acceptable Printing. Yeah, they're really good. I couldn't do that myself, so yeah.
Are they the folks out of Chicago, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, they do some really, really, really cool books. Yeah. All right. I think that's like all the questions. Are there any other things you want to specifically cover with this interview, Rumi? Like any things you want to promote? Any specific topics? We can just edit them in.
I can't think of anything now. It was really fun to talk to you.
Yeah. It was Sean. Awesome to talk to you too. And I always like when I'm talking to a cartoonist, I always like to just like, well, like when I'm introduced to a cartoonist, I like to just really go in deep into the, you know, like read all of the stuff at once. I'm like, I want just like the entire collection. And it's kind of amazing the amount of mini comics you've put out over the course of just a few years. And
I love mini comics.
Yeah. And they are so, yeah. And you're definitely like using the medium of mini comics to do like a lot of different types of books. It's not just like a folded in half, you know, letter bound book. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but like you're doing screen printing, you're doing risograph printing, you're doing different formats as well.
How do you print your stuff?
I do everything digital now, or offset. Those are the things. I really like working with spot colors too.
Mm.
So that was a big deal for me, I think. We can cut this from the interview, but we want to talk real quick about color stuff. Like, that was it. Like, when I was first learning to draw comics, I was obsessed with, like, mark making, you know, like getting textures into everything, right? And then eventually, like, I remember, do you know who Robin Chapman is? She's like an editor at First Second.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, yeah. She did like a portfolio review with me, and she's like, you just need to use like a color instead. Because I would like fill in, you know, I'd like hatch everything. And she's like, you can just use a color. And it was just like
yeah.
So like now, you know, ever since then, like, yeah, like I just like take a piece of vellum, slap it on there and use a brush and kind of like build up those textures that way. And then like just, you know, scan it and throw it in. But that's always been my method. But obviously print, you know, when you're printing your things yourself, it's a little expensive to do colors.
So, that's interesting that you mentioned like the life-changing moment when someone tells you this really like seemingly basic thing, but you'd never thought of before. I talked to the cartoonist Michael Cho at a book festival in Brooklyn one time, and it was when Shoplifter, his book, came out, and it's done with two colors, black and pink, and I was like, how does he do that? Is it it doesn't look digital, but how does he do that? And then so I went up to him and asked him, you know, like just directly how he does it, just expecting him being like, oh, leave me alone. But yeah, he told me that he inks on one side of paper and then he flips it over on light box, and then he inks the second layer. And I was like, whoa.
Of course. That makes perfect
sense. That's amazing. Yeah. And then he was like, okay, so I just scanned them in and put them together in Photoshop, easy peasy. I was like, wow. And that's actually what I did for Nori.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. That makes perfect sense. Like you just get like spot on registration. You don't have to worry about like your vellum slipping or something. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's a good tip. I like that.
It is. Yeah. So I guess it's really important to talk to other people.
Yeah. I guess you're like looking at your artwork backwards too. Does that mess with you? Because I feel like whenever I see something of mine flipped, like my brain's like, oh, you drew that wrong. Does that ever like bother you when you're looking at something backwards? Or are you just like, we're just going with it. We're just like.
No, it does. I'm totally weirded out by like if I have to like flip something horizontally, I'm like, ew, what is that?
Yeah.
Now I try to I sketch everything digitally now. So I try to when I'm in doubt, I just flip it to look at it from the other side before finalizing it.
Are you like? Because I know some people now, they're like penciling digitally and then like printing it off and inking it. Are you doing that? Or are you like doing everything digital? Okay. Rad. Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Do you find that's like increased your speed? Sorry, go ahead.
Definitely. No, yes. It definitely increased my speed. So I do thumbnails by hand. And then I scan it in and work from, I make it bigger in Photoshop. And then I do a really tight pencil sketch. I don't know why I'm that anal, but it's so tight. And then I print everything out and then I put it on a light box and put my good paper on top of it and ink it. But because all the details are there and I already figured out the shape and proportion perspective and everything, I can be like on autopilot when I ink. So it's a very enjoyable process.
Yeah. Yeah, inking's the best.
Inking's the best. Yeah, I know.
It's the most fun part. I when I work, I have to like have if I'm writing or penciling, like it's like I can't listen to anything, you know, but as soon as I get to inking, I'm like, okay, I can finally like listen to a podcast or something and like just like zone out, you know. It's like,
yeah, I do the same thing. And it's funny because I can look back at the pages that I inked and I can remember what I was listening to.
Yes.
The podcast.
Yes. Do you make soundtracks for yourself? Do you have like a playlist? Do you have like a project playlist?
No, I like podcasts. I like there are several podcasts that I like, so I just play that randomly. But I think my favorite might be Terry Gross, Fresh Air. I just love hearing her voice. Yeah. Oh, I just need a new podcast to listen to lately. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a pandemic, so I feel like everyone's starting one. So like this is like the renaissance of podcasts. I feel like there's
that's new true
ones, a lot of things popping up, so
that's true. I feel like I've been listening to my favorite ones way too much, and I just like consumed all of it all at once.
Oh sure, yeah.
So yeah, I just need to find new things.
I like to, my move is like whatever like story I'm working on or project I'm working on, like I pick a band and like that's the band I like draw to. That's like what I'm like, this is the attitude of this story. It's like my, but yeah, like there are pages where I'm like, I know exactly like what I was. Yeah. And that's always like fun to like look at something. Like I remember like, yeah, the thing I was listening to.
Yeah. It's almost like the world that you were in when. Yeah.
Yes. So we'll wrap things up, but can you tell us where we can find your work?
Yeah, so my website is rumihara.com. I'm on Instagram at rumi.hara. And you can buy a copy of Nori from your local bookstore or bookshop.org online.
Well, thanks for joining us for this online festival. I'm so sorry we couldn't have you in person. We're really excited to do it. But we really appreciate that you're able to take some time today and talk with us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for doing this and having me at the online Otoptic. I hope I get to visit you guys.
Well, we'd love to
in
have
the future.
You.
Yeah. Picking up right where we left off in the right on cycles. You are listening to Right On Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at kfai.org. I'd like to thank our guests tonight, Sean Knickerbocker and Rumi Hara, the Autoptic Board, and Pete Fakey, plus our listeners who make this show possible. Without your support and donations, KFAI would not be possible. You can find more news and info about Right On Radio at kfai.org/program/Right On Radio. Plus, listen to recent episodes on our newly launched podcast, which you can find on Spotify, iTunes, kfai.org, and wherever else podcasts can be found. Now.